Welcome to MicroCollege. My name is Jacob Hunt. I'm the director of Thoreau College. We are a microcollege located in rural Wisconsin. If you're listening to us here at the beginning of 2026, we have an exciting year of programs in the works here at Thoreau College. We are still accepting applications for all of them. That includes our spring 2026 Metamorphosis Gap Semester and our fall 2026 Metamorphosis Gap Semester, as well as our summer 2026 Driftless Field School program starting on July 1st. We're also accepting applications for 2026-27 Driftless Folk School and Youth Initiative High School teaching fellows and for our scholar or artist in residence programs. So if you're interested in any of those, please check us out on the web at thoreaucollege.org. Today on the show, I'm delighted to welcome a couple of guests all the way zooming in from Denmark. Folks I got to meet during my first ever visit to Denmark this past summer at the International People's College, a gathering of folk school and folk high school educators from around the world. The guests today are Mette and Lars Høiland, who are the founders of an organization called Menneske First, Life Dialogues. Great ambassadors and spokespeople for the idea of folk high school education and holistic education in general. Really looking forward to this conversation. So our guests here are Mette. Mette is the co-founder of Life Dialogues, and she writes in her biography, "I have lived my life in the Danish free schools, both as a child and as an adult. I graduated from the Free Teachers College in Ullerup and has worked for 22 years as a folk high school teacher. I am deeply touched when people meet and trust, so it is my focal point both as a facilitator and as a teacher. I have traveled a lot in the world and have also been on countless journeys inwards in an insatiable curiosity about what it means to be human and live a life for joy and benefit, both for myself and my surroundings. On these journeys, I found new nuances in the Grundtvigian philosophy that gave me a large and rich interpersonal and spiritual foundation. The key to this foundation is about conversation, about being able to be present, about listening, and about creating together, both with each other and that which is bigger than us." Lars is the co-founder and chairman of the association Life Dialogues, and he writes in his biography, "In terms of education, I first trained as a teacher at the Free Teachers College in Ullerup in 1990, and immediately after that, I started studying theology. Since 1999, I've been a parish priest on West Funen, where I live with my wife, Mette. I see myself as a Grundtvigian-oriented priest, but I also find inspiration in other traditions. The important thing is that the words lead to love and a sense of homeliness in life. In Life Dialogues, I'm involved in inspirational evenings, home folk high schools, training of home folk high school hosts, and the publishing house Kleophas. I also offer to be a spiritual co-walker, i.e., a conversation partner who seeks to help you in the direction of the spirit wants to carry you in particular. Love is a relational phenomenon, and whoever wants to share in love must love themselves. It has always been that way, but for me, the one I must love is not only myself and my fellow human beings, it is also nature and all creation. The inner sustainability of humans is closely linked to the sustainability of the planet. To work for spiritual well-being is also to work for the well-being of the planet. In the company of other people, I am concerned with the respectful meeting from heart to heart. The greatest thing is when contact occurs and we together make each other wiser about life." Thank you so much for joining us, Mette and Lars.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. It's so exciting.
So here on the podcast, I think you guys are well prepared for our first question, which is just about some life, telling some life stories. Mette, maybe you could begin. If you could talk a bit about your life when you're a young adult. 18 to 21 years old. We asked this question because it's the age of many of the students that we work with, and this pivotal stage of early adulthood. So yeah, can you just share where you were and what were some of the important things in your life in that period?
Yeah, with joy. I was so lucky that I knew from very early on that I wanted to become a teacher from Ollerup. And becoming a teacher there does not demand that you have a certain paper, but it demanded that I had seen parts of the world, that I had maybe taken a gone to a folk high school, worked, tried to do different things, so really experienced the world. So my 18 to 21 was pretty much saying, okay, so I have to go out and enjoy and learn. And so I think when I turned 18, I was in France. I worked 1 year in France as an jeune fille au pair girl. So I was there for a year. I had been to the United States. I lived 1 year in Santa Barbara with my mother's cousin, who invited me to stay there. So I did grade 11 in high school because I didn't want to do all the exams and all of that. I just wanted to experience it. And then later on, I was. Let's see, then I was in the Faroe Islands for 6 months working in a fish factory and in a hotel. And the Faroe Islands is a part of Denmark in the North Sea towards Greenland. And then the last one was I was 6 months traveling Asia with my boyfriend at the time. So that was. And then I started at the and at Ollerup, I think 2021, 22. So I was very lucky to be able to really experience the world at that time.
Yeah, beautiful. So I've been asking this question to people for about 3.5 years now, and travel is a very, very common feature of transformation. Whether people have a strong sense like you did of what you might want to do or not, right? That's it's a I think it's an ancient technique of crossing the threshold into adulthood. And I think having places like Thoreau College or the folk high schools in Denmark, as a place to land as part of that is also a rich kind of addition to it. I want to mention before we go much farther is that in preparing for this, I've been reading Mehta's book, which is called What You Say Makes Me Think, The Folk High School from Within, which is a beautiful book. And we'll share the links to the organization and also to the book in the show notes. But reading it, there's a lot, you share a lot of your life story in the book, and I felt a lot of kinship with you. I also have grown up in kind of education and alternative schools here in my hometown, and I had a sense going into college or into what I did after high school that teaching was probably going to be a part of it. And so I really enjoyed to see the way that you've developed that story. Yeah.
Nice.
Lars, what can you share with us from that time of life?
From 18 to 21.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first I just finished my school, and that was fine and not very interesting, but I did. What was interesting though was that I spent most of my time with I was a Sea Scout, and just doing a lot of stuff with my friends, and it was like a library, big library of friends, and we were doing all kinds of things, and sailing, and having a great time together. And then I was supposed to become a soldier, but in Denmark you pick a number, and if it's too low, then you have to be a soldier. But I said no, I don't want to. So I said instead, okay, I'll do something else. And then I was asked to take care of a lot of mentally retarded children and like that. And then when that was over, I felt like adventure. And in the 70s, which was at that time, I was there was something we could do at that time, just getting a lot of young people together. We were 100 young people going together and buying a big boat 60-foot yacht, and saying, okay, this is going to sail around the world. And then I was skippering at the time when it was in Australia, and it was a great time.
Wow.
So when you were saying this about why this from 18 to 21, I came to think of that was the basic of joining or going into life as if it's an adventure. Not seeking too much safety or security. Safety and security is fine, but I really think life gets so much bigger when there's also adventure and curiosity and a bit courage to go a bit further than safety is. And
Exploring.
exploring, that's a good word. Exploring life and not safety is good, but not just good. There has to be some kind of adventure. So that's what I was practicing from 18 to 21.
Practicing adventure, that's great. Yeah, that really resonates as well. I think I think that there is some sense of risk, right, is often an important part of this story, whether it's physical risk, whether it's putting yourself out there in a social sense, or doing something hard, is something that definitely I see people seeking for, and a lot of self-knowledge comes from that, for sure. Yeah, wonderful. So I think that there's so many things to talk about, in this story. I think one of the things I'd love to talk about is to once again to our audience has heard a few people talk about folk high schools in Denmark from different perspectives, either as teachers or as scholars or as students. But it's an idea that I think, I see it now as part of the mission of this podcast to tell more people about people in the United States and elsewhere who might not have heard of it, because I think it's a powerful model. And I think that your work, the book, and your life work, is definitely part of this. You've taken on roles of being an ambassador of this idea around the world. I understand recently you returned from a trip to China where you were talking about not just folk high schools, but folk home settings, which is part of the work. Maybe we can to get into this. You do a beautiful job in the book Metta of sharing some of your stories. But assuming that a person is tuning into this for the first time, can you introduce us in the most basic sense to the what is a folk high school in the Danish context? And then, yeah, we've mentioned a couple times in your biography this name Grundtvig,
Yeah.
who's an important part of the whole story. That's a huge question, I know, but maybe I'm expecting you have used to this qu kind of big question.
Yeah, but and I get shaky each time, because it's like, oh, what comes out today? Because when you boil it down to something reachable, but I'll do my very best. The folk high school structurally is a school, a boarding school, where people come and stay. Typically, yeah, between 18 to 21, and but also a lot older. But you have to be 18 to be there. It is what is a non-formal adult education. There is no exam whatsoever. In fact, if a folk high school in Denmark created an exam, they would immediately lose their right to public money. We are quite heavily funded by the Danish state. I'm not sure of the numbers now, but as I
70.
so yes, it's 70 now. So about 70% is of the cost is covered by the Danish state, and then the students pay the rest themselves. And which amounts to which would be it's about 1400 Danish kroner per week, which would be what, 200?
$220.
$200? A
220.
little bit more maybe.
This is a
And then you,
3 or 4 months long.
yeah, typically 3, 4 months. But the school I was in, you know, the schools are have different focuses. Some have music, some have arts, some have journalists, and some have a lot have sports. And some are more a little bit overall. And the school I was in was quite overall. So we had also students who maybe had a difficulty finding out, what am I going to do? And maybe they had had some trouble before. And so they could, some of them stayed a year to really get what they wanted. But the main idea, you could say, is to that you get a taste of life. You become interested, you become curious. It's like enlightenment of life is the term. And then also the two others help me. I should have.
Living interaction and the living
No,
word.
no, 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 no. Well, it's like a general. It's a general teaching of life, and so the idea is that you practice. You, of course, you learn something. If you come to an art school, then you do a lot of drawing and like that. But the main idea is really to learn to get together, to share with each other, to allow that vulnerability that when you live together, then, you know, at one point you have to throw all the masks. You have to be yourself. And, you know, you come down in the morning and you're tired and you eat your cereal, you whatever. You get into conflicts and you cannot just turn your back. And so you have to figure it out, even if it can be difficult. And all of these together create, because it creates a really huge community, because the frame that is behind it is very trustful, that, you know, the staff, the teachers, they are there to support you. They are there to say, hey, yeah, try, just try. We will hold, you know, if you fall, we'll hold you. And of course, there's a balance, the living interaction, as you mentioned before. There's a balance between the individual and the community that both has to thrive. And there's magic in this balance, in this living interaction, that you are encouraged to grow, and but you're also encouraged to share. You cannot just stand alone in the wind. So and when that happens, when that is done, then you sometimes it feels like flying. Because when everybody is supporting each other, you know, we always had like a theater project week in each semester, and those weeks were, it was really heavy on the teachers, because you had to be there all the time. But the thing that the end of it is, as I'm sure everybody has tried in their life, some kind of community build up, where you make an event together, or and then the feeling of, wow, this was great,
Yeah,
when you're
we did it together.
yeah,
Yes. Yeah.
we did it, and we did something we didn't think, I didn't think I could do this, but I could, you know. So a community, a well-balanced way of being together, way of learning, as young people and above, and usually coming out knowing much more of who you are, knowing much more of what you would like to do and what you don't want to do. And as I have put somewhere in the book, is that it's, you know, very normal that people, when they come home and they are asked, so what did you do? What was it? And then people, they give up. They say, I can't explain to you what it was. You have to try it because there's so much happening in between the lines. It's not so defined. This is what you will get because each time it depends on the people who are there. It's an experience that are similar, of course, but it has its own nuances and plays out with the people who are there because they have to co-create.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was
So
that
that's great. Yeah, I think there, we'll flesh this out, through this conversation, and people, go back to some of our earlier conversations as well. But I really resonate as I've started to learn more and more about the Fokai schools. I feel it's something very familiar for me. I've lived and worked my whole life in alternative education here, but here these are strange places. They're very unusual. They're often in a niche off to the side. To know about, in your book you quote from the law of the Danish government, which is governing the Fokai schools. As you say, there's strong support from the state for this. For these education, just to I found myself quoting this section of the book to people here several times after reading it, which is that the teaching must be of a broad general character, right? And as you mentioned, it must not be have tests, must not be offering a credential. It's not a training for a profession or for a certification for something like that. It's familiar from the work that we're doing, but like I say, it's unusual and to see it encoded in a in the
in
law
law.
and having having such a deep historical and contemporary presence in a whole country is very striking.
Unfortunately, I think that if it had been a law that should be passed today, maybe it would not have been allowed. I mean, maybe it would not have happened. But luckily, we have it, and it has a very good reputation. So, and a broad acceptance in the parliament. So I cannot imagine that they would take it away. But you could definitely question if it would have been allowed today.
Yeah, one of the things I thought about this is that I think the work of Thoreau College, this micro college movement that we are part of is in a way working against some of the currents of the time, right? And in the United States, it's not exactly the same, but some of the spirit has been contained in the liberal arts college, which is the really the most common form of education for college, for young adult students in this country for the last 150 years, was of a broad general character, right? It was not mostly specifically training to be a profession. There were tests and there were grades, but it was not, it was intended to be a general quality, and the campuses had many of the qualities that you're describing. There are people engaging in dialogues, people making art together, people living together in dorms and things like that. Many of those things and the whole idea of the liberal arts college has been really under attack, has had a really hard time here for the last 20 or 30 years. And for many of the same reasons, this is an idea that's for whatever reason becoming hard to understand in the current economy and political environment.
Definitely.
So,
I think.
Lars, maybe you mentioned in your biography that you work as a you're a priest in the church, and but you also part of that is inspiration taking from Grundtvig. Maybe you could share a bit about what that means and what that means brings into your role as a priest.
Yeah, I'll try. And maybe I will begin with a little translation of the funny Danish words you mentioned, which were menneske først. It's a Danish words, and they are very, very Grundtvigian. And it means human first. And the reason why we just didn't really translate that directly into English was that a human first could sound as if you would say human above nature. The human being is the first above everything. But now it's more like saying I want you to be the human you are. And it's that's the way I'm a priest here in Denmark, and that's pretty much what high school, and I believe that Thoreau College would be the same. Supporting people not to be something different, something new, but to be you. And I don't want you to be, I don't, first and foremost,
Professor.
a professor or a customer in my shop, or I just want you to be you. And then living with this curiosity. And not trying to make you fit into some kind of a ideology or a pattern or something that I want you to be. You're not my tool. You're the aim. You're the goal yourself. How can I help you to be you? And then discovering that when I do this, putting the human being first, the one you are, then there's something big happens. It's like 1 plus 1 becomes 3. It's like when I really want you to be you and you want me to be me, then this dialogue suddenly gets a taste of, well, now it's a priest word, of eternity. Suddenly time is filled with eternity. And because I'm just curious, who are you? And at the same time, who am I? And this feeling of dialogues, that's where, to me, the big things are happening.
And if you should answer as Grundtvig,
And if I should?
why did he say menneske first?
Yeah, that's right. He said, human first, and then after that, you would become a Christian. He would say human first and then Christian,
Not the other way around.
not the other way. You shouldn't be brought up to become a Christian and then and then you're a human being. It's the other way around. As soon as you are you, then it doesn't get bigger than that. But nowadays, I think it's hard to talk about Christianity because it's easily become something very ideology based, narrow-minded actually. But when in Grundtvig's terms, then it's just the biggest thing when you discover your life as a mystery. What's going on? I don't know, but something wants to express itself through me and through you. And what's going on? And this feeling of eternity in the middle of time, I
Can I
think.
say something
Sure.
that I think that also connects to the folk high school of, that it's like you step out of the, oh, I have to get education, I have to get a good job, I have to get a family, I have blah, 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 all this stuff I have to reach out here. But actually, just to take a moment to step to the side and then realize what is in here and getting the time and the opportunity to open up for, that mystery. And that is, of course, a totally individual travel. But we can do different things to support that travel and taking a rest, not a rest, but taking a stay in the folk high school can really support that opening.
Yeah. There's so much. That's really a lot of rich things that you just said there, both of you. But I think that opening, right? And that's one of the reasons it's so hard to define what goes on in a folk high school or Thoreau College, or because you don't want to define it, right? You want it to be open to see what arrives, what comes in. And that's, there's something fundamental to being human that is part of that. It's not defined, predefined, predetermined. It's an to be human is to be an open space for wonderful things to happen.
In many ways, I would put it like this, that in normal life, you think that time is passing, and then you really have to make the best out of it because time is passing. But when you get into this, let's call it thorough college of high school mode, then you discover that time is coming. And what's going on? I don't know. Time is coming. And what's going on? Let's go to an adventure of what is coming. And therefore, Jacob, I've had a question, which is a surprise for you. But I'm actually curious, what did you do when you were 18 to 21?
I had the great fortune of so in high school, the meaning 16 to 18 year old here, I had this just powerfully transformative experience of being involved with starting a new school, collaborating with peers, with my parents, with other community members, in really, a very open space of adults and teenagers to create a new educational experience. So for me, at that age, that was life changing, life shaping
Yeah, early.
experience. And I also fell in love with my hometown, with rural Wisconsin, and the idea of vibrant rural communities and philosophies of education of mind and and books and things like that. So very, very rich. And then I was able to follow that up with a couple of more really wonderful educational experiences that have shaped what I'm doing here today at Thoreau College. One was Deep Springs College, which I've explored on the podcast as well, which is a micro college. It was striking to be there at the International People's College in Denmark, which was started in 1921, I think was the date. There was a lot of experimentation education going along that time. So Deep Springs was started in 1917, and it was just getting going in the early 20s. And it's located on a cattle ranch in California, and it's 25 students. And so a lot of what we're doing at Thoreau College is directly inspired by that
So what was
example.
the name again?
Deep Springs.
Deep Spring.
Deep
Okay.
Springs College, which is a it continues today over 100 years later. It's a 2-year accredited liberal arts college. So the students spend 2 years, then they transfer there to graduate elsewhere. But meanwhile, they work on the ranch. It's a working cattle ranch with cows and horses and big gardens and things like that. And also, the students do a lot of the governance. They work. They run the admissions process. They do a lot of the work with hiring faculty and managing this labor program there. So it's very empowering, very very small, and very very just a dramatic location in the desert in the American West near the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Great.
Wow.
So, and then I was able to I worked for a few months as a cowboy there for the ranch, working up in the mountains with learned how to shoe horses and rope and things like that. And then I finished my bachelor's degree in Eastern Europe. I spent 2 years in Bulgaria, in the American University in Bulgaria, which is a liberal arts college with students from all over the Balkans, from the former Yugoslavia and former Soviet Union, and so a very rich cultural experience there. And that was again an experiment. It was a very different type of education than is typical of that region, and very international. And this was in the aftermath of the wars in Serbia
Yeah,
and Kosovo.
what year were you there?
I was there. I arrived there the week before September 11th, 2001. So that
Wow.
was also the perspective from which I
Okay.
saw that series of historical
Oh.
events, which you talk about in the book too.
Yeah.
So that was part of my memory. So
Yeah,
international
you have
travel,
that.
and but the theme is education and this holistic model of education that I'm still engaged with now.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we are on the same path for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, this phrase, I'm glad that you took some time to translate that, human first for us, Lars, because I think that's a term that has more and more resonance. We are, with technological developments and institutional developments, we are in this question of what is it, what are what does it mean to be human? What is the role of humans and in the world, and how do we develop educational and community models that really celebrate and cultivate that quality, whatever it is. And it, I think is acute and increasingly important.
I can't help, but maybe I'm naive, but I can't help but think that maybe some of the all of the AI and the technology that has, in many ways, that has taken over so many things, and you could say that has taken humanity, well, pushed humanity out. But I can't help but think, especially with AI, maybe that is exactly what's going to bring the focus back to the humanity, because what is it that it cannot do? We will I think very fast see, if, and maybe some has already seen it, the well, even myself, I have been doing online stuff also to China, and the difference, even though maybe we try to say the same things, but it's not the same inspiration. It's a completely different thing being together. And there's something about the human heart and all of our energy that has not been defined for most of us yet. And I think that maybe all this technology is actually going to bring us right back to what is the center of things? At least I hope
Yeah, me
that.
too. You think about all that credentialing, the formal education of the, especially the last couple of hundred years, it's been about, cramming information into people's heads and very, mechanical skills. And that's almost entirely useless now. Right? Because the information is instantly available anywhere. And what's hard is how to live with other people and how to craft, lives of meaning and beauty and and relationship, right? As you talk about.
And in that way, as Mette says, the understanding, yeah, it's okay, pretty good to understand, but that's not what can't be called the living interaction. And the living interaction is okay, what you say makes me think, and the curiosity and the adventure and the surprises and the not knowing. The not knowing is a good thing. It keeps the curiosity open, but AI does not think not knowing is good.
Exactly. That's really striking, right? It cannot say, I don't know.
And so it says things, that are crazy sometimes because it
Just to
cannot
say
say I
something.
don't.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, the living interaction. In the book Metta, you spell out kind of three pillars of the folk high school education: enlightenment of life, living interaction, and the living word. I would you That's of course a huge part of the book, but is there can you walk us through those a little bit?
Well, the enlightenment of life is, I think we have maybe touched mostly upon already, that this idea that it's a wonder for Grundtvig. Something we haven't mentioned is that Grundtvig was also a song writer, or he was a poet, so he has left us many, 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 many songs, and many of them are still sung a lot in the folk high schools. He talks about in one song, the simple, I forget how I translated this, the simple life on the simple, joyful life on earth, and to in our time, we tend to, oh, you have to be something, you have to get to something, and to be more than your neighbor, or earn more money, or all of these things, and he goes completely opposite, against that. That it is in the little things, it's in life itself that you find the joy, in the living interaction, being together with other people, sharing with other people, experimenting, asking yourself, what does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to be a human being in the world, in society, etc.? And all of that was to it, because it's important to remember that this came out at a time where Denmark was getting its first constitution and democracy was came on for the first time. They had never tried it before. And so he was very worried, you know, how can the farmer, how can he decide anything about the country? So it was very important to teach people about that. So he thought about, yeah, of course there were certain things, practical things you needed to know about, but you needed to know your story. You needed to know, at that time, Christianity was, of course, undiscussable. Can you say that? And so it was the Bible stories, but it was definitely also the history of the country that you needed to understand the story, know the story. You had to share the stories about your own life. When I always compare that when people got together at that time, from one village in one end of Denmark and another other village in another end, then it was just as huge as when we now today get together from different countries, because they had never been out of there when the farmers came to these folk high schools at that
And they
time.
had somewhat different languages and traditions and other
Yeah,
things as well.
at least a different dialect, so it was very hard
Yeah.
to understand each other. But anyway, so the enlightenment of the individual life that, oh, you know, life is worth living. I can do something. That was the simple way, I guess you could define what enlightenment of life is about. That you see that it is joyful, that it is divine, and that it is that you can do something. You too are. You are carrying this divinity. And then the living word was the method that you shared with each other. What do I think? How do I reflect upon these things? How I can share my story, you can share your story. And especially between teachers and students, that was very new, something that had not. Well, we had tried it in England at the universities, where they're, oh my God, the students and the professors, they share their ideas, so they can really move forward because they have this openness and curiosity towards each other, and that was not in the Danish universities at that time. So he really wanted to put that into the schools, and the living interaction is I would say a universal thing, and I think that is my own discovery in taking up this task of writing the book to share the folk high school essence, and to be able to bring it out of Denmark. Because the living interaction, I believe, is yeah, it's a universal thing. It is our hearts that can share with each other, that can connect. That can inspire, and so that is always when there's like an opposite. So it can be two people, it could be teacher and student, but it can also be past and future, and so on. That dark, light and dark, you know, all the it's like being in all the being free in all the opposites. And I think that's maybe what we see these days, unfortunately, that there's a st stagnation that is, no, you have to be in this side or that side. You cannot be. So there's really a universal, very important exchange, very important, what do you call it?
Way of being in the world.
Quality, yeah.
Yeah, like, and not structure. What is the, it's like,
It's an ethos,
sorry?
or
Yeah,
quality.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
an ethic. I think a word that shows up throughout the book that really resonated with me, and I think throughout this whole concept, this form of education, is trust. Right? It's something that you write about. I mean, it's if you think about the introduction of democracy, right, which is part of this story, it's how can you, give political authority or responsibility to everybody, to the country people and the peasants and the workers. And similarly in a classroom, right? You tell some beautiful stories that really resonated with me as a teacher about you start a class, you've kind of an idea of what you want to do, but then you encounter the actual students and what's actually living in that moment. And I think there that recalls forth a lot of like courage to trust what the students are bringing from their own lives and their own kind of hearts, as well as what might come out of the process. And I think that's a that's really a core to a lot of the education that I we try to do here. And it's really it was fun to hear your stories about ideas that came in that came from students that weren't part of the original plan in the courses that you're teaching.
Some were good, some were bad.
Right. But something will come out of it, right? And so yeah, that's a there's a sense of trust in the divine spark in every person, and especially working together in the context of a community.
And also in that, in the exchange, like there is, if the freedom and the responsibility is not in every person in that room, then you can be sure to create opposition, right? But when everybody is invited on board, of course, we are not speaking of something always beautiful, flowing, da da da. There, people are sick, they were drunk last night, whatever. Life is happening every day. But the fact that the intention is always you're important and we are missing out when you're not here. That I think is really, and also the idea, let's hear what do you have to share? And of course, I have many times asked students questions where I didn't expect an answer, but it was very important for me. Well, I hoped for an answer, of course, but I knew that this is going to be very difficult. I will ask it as easy I can, and I will show you that I expect that you can answer it. And so that maybe you can't do it today, but maybe next time, because oh, she thought my opinion was important. Maybe I should listen a little bit different. Or maybe next time I dare say, because now I know more friends in the room, or but the fact that everybody has a say, and that the trust, as you're saying, that we trust life. There's a reason that this is here, and of course sometimes we must also say, well, there is a community. And you have to play with that as well. So it also happens that it's not possible to move on together. But most of the time, I would say that then the flow will make things happen. And even the fact that some people would, some students would see other students not contributing as much as they did. That's always a thing. But to as a teacher, to hold the stick that everybody's doing the best they can with the resources they have. So we will have to, what can we do to help? If this is not good enough, then we all have a responsibility to do something about it.
Shared responsibility is an important thing. So before we get too far into the time here, I wanted to so you mentioned that you worked in folk high schools for 22 years, but now you've kind of stepped out of that formal teaching role to try to, my sense is to distill some of this, the essential elements and to bring that to make that available to people of all ages and in their homes. The idea of the home folk high school.
Homeschool high school, yes.
And this
Yeah.
is, the work of the Menitska First Life Dialogues as an organization. So can you share a little bit about the origin of that idea? And then what does that look like in practice?
Well, maybe last you should
Okay,
you can
I'll
do
go
that
for that
one.
one. We have there's things we're doing at home, like inviting people to for an evening with some kind of a topic. Tonight we're going to we have invited a woman who is making drum dance or whatever, and that has given her a lot. So we invite people to come here, and then this woman she would tell, or the speaker would tell for like approximately 20 minutes. And then it's very kind of strict framing for the dialogue. We have put some questions first, and then you, Jacob, if you were there, you would have like 3 minutes to answer this question, and nobody should interrupt you. It's just like, okay, now they're just listening. Uh-oh, they're listening, and they're really listening deeply. And then when I have said what I really feel from down here about it, then it's the next one. And the next one, and the next one, and then after that, you can share your that's kind of normal dialogue, but it's this deep respect of your point of view, you whatever your go to it is, and then after that, there would be another circle of a new question, and we're eating together. The big thing about this is the framing that people really discover how big it is that somebody's listening to me and I'm able to talk. It's not just about chit chat and how is the weather, what is going on. No, they want me to talk from the depth of my heart, and they're really interested in it. And that's what we are doing here, and encouraging other people to do also. As you mentioned, we and especially Meta has been in China, could be anywhere. But I especially remember one person who said, usually I would attend a course, and then I would ask the teacher, what is the right thing to do in this situation, because I have a problem. And then he discovered that no, the course that Mette and I did, Mette didn't give an answer, but she was just listening. And while
Yeah, and
listening,
made
and
him tell stories
made him
too.
tell stories. And then he said, "Oh, but now I know what the answer, they come from myself, and now I know what to do, because the way you listen, I discover that the answer that I needed came from myself." So I think very often the people think that it's about giving the right answer, but maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's about listening in the right way. And when you listen really deeply, then people kind of know already what is the answer to the question.
And I think that here comes also the it's the narr it's about the narrative that when we are together around a story instead of around a truth. Well, it is a truth because it's truth. What I tell is true for me, and what Lars tells is true for him and for you, Jacob. And but it is in the narrative, there's room for all three of them. We don't have to agree. But we can actually, develop a new concept together without really knowing it. The storytelling itself is, it's not just telling this is how I experience this. It is also, I think, creating new, or naturally, it creates new stories in all of us. Ah, to me, this was before like this, but now I can add your perspective to mine without having to change my own, but I can add to it. And so it's also our stories that creates our outer world. So in order to let them grow, or have them grow and not dive into one corner, I think it's underestimated as it is right now what storytelling can actually do.
Absolutely. Yeah, this narrative, as you're saying, is this is a fundamental quality of being human. And I think what you're describing in the form of the home folk high school, these life dialogues, it reminds me, I think a lot of the task of educators, we do the Driftless Folk School here, which is teaching basic kind of cooking and gardening skills like this, as well as the Thoreau College, things which are very similar to the folk high school. Many of these things are skills and activities that no one would have had to teach at a certain time in the past, right? Getting together to have a meal, to have a conversation, to share stories is something that is some way fundamental, almost natural to human beings, but is harder and harder for people to do now, right?
Yes,
And there are barriers to actually doing that very basic activity that have to do with technology, having to do with essential individualism and some of the divisions that we see in the world. But so it makes sense to create, you say a structure, a form. What are the particular questions? That maybe you could share just the order of an evening that you lay out in some of your materials. It includes, more than just a conversation. There's other types of activities. There's a game worked into it. There's a kind of opening and a closing. There's a song.
People comes or people come and then there's some kind of an landing activity. We do a little game or we sing a song or something that makes people okay, I used my mouth. Maybe I touched somebody, or now I'm here. And then we have a topic so that there is always that common third, that it's not just, oh, how are you? It's
Right.
we talk about something that can maybe that is needed right now or so some kind of topic. And that is 15, 20 minutes. And then when th we have heard that, then we have prepared. If I am the one who is the host, then I have prepared questions beforehand. And then people will sit four and four in groups. And as we do it here, each person brings a little food. So it's like a what do you call a potluck?
Potluck.
They go grab some food, they sit down, and then they start with the first question. And then, as last described before, then it is one by one. And it's really funny how this very strict way of having the conversation gives a lot of freedom to people. Because they feel they, as Lars also said, they're listened to and they can talk until they are not disturbed until they're done. And so then we have two rounds, typically two rounds of questions. And in between, then we move one person usually from the group so that you are not together with the full same group, but there are some all the time that you know from before. And that gives a good dynamic of the process. And then when the process is done, then there's a checkout and a cup of tea or coffee so that you share what you're taking home. Like what you said made me think, or tonight made me think. And that is always, it is something I have used in my teachings for many years. And you know, sometimes you have learned something that you are not aware of. And so to hear everybody's comments, it can seem like that's a little bit waste of time. We have to hear everybody. But it's really great when we're not too many, of course. If you are 50, then you don't do it. But you get go home with much more, because maybe Lars would say something that, oh yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. I actually also got that. So I think that part is of sharing is really it's like a love act in a way that you share with each other in that sense, and it gives so much more volume
Yeah.
to what comes out of it.
If you are asked to, if you have the opportunity to formulate that, to say it out loud, whatever you're taking away from the conversation, it's so much more real. And especially if it finds resonance in other people, it's like, oh yeah, I resonate with that. Yeah, that was powerful. Yeah.
I also think that if you go to the normal school world, then you have an exam, and then the exam is about saying a lot. And that's a good thing. You get a good grade if you say the right thing. But in these getting together things, then it's equal important to say something from your heart, to have courage to be honest. And equal important to listen. The art of listening, I think that's an underestimated art, and that's really needed nowadays, because it's when you really listen, are able to do that, then you get in contact, then something new is happening.
And the actually what the courses we have done in China here in the last time was we called them deep listening, because for the Chinese, they are in an extreme way that I did not imagine before, even though I was there when I was young, that they are so outer focused. They are brought up to be completely outer focused. And that leaves them in a space right now where
What do you
they
mean by that? What do you mean by outer focus in this context?
that it's not about how do I feel about this? It is for the community, for my boss, for my country, for whatever, then I have to do this. So for instance, a mother or a father with their child, they don't ask, how are you? They tell them, you have to go to school, you have to do this, you have to do that, and now I want you to see you do this, and we also have to go tonight so you can learn this, because later you need blah blah. So in that sense, it is never taking care of what is inside. It's all the time taking care of the outside. I feel like telling a little story, if that's okay, from and which was exactly this situation. We have done the folk high school or the home folk high school model in a class, and it was a 2-day course. And there's a mother who comes the second day. She comes back and we have a check-in. And then she says, you know what? I went home yesterday and I asked my son, how are you? I decided when I went home that I would go home and ask him, how are you? And he was 10, 11 years old. And she was so surprised. First of all, he was so good at sharing how he was. And she didn't know. She had never asked him that before. She said, yeah, he even told some trouble that he has at school, but also some ideas and da 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 da. So they had had a wonderful talk that evening. And then the next morning, he had come up to her and given her a big hug, which he never did, and said, Mom, you're a good mom because you're listening to what I'm saying. And that story. And then, well, actually, there's a little plus to the when I came back then in the fall. Then the mother came back to me and she said, you know what? I have a new story. My son has asked me and my husband to look into each other's eyes 10 minutes every day.
Wow.
And he wants 5 minutes with each of us, and we have done that. Not looking in, but just, asking how has your day been, blah blah blah. And so she said, "You know what? I don't know why, but we just have s much better relationships." So I said, "I have to meet him one day. He must be a clever little boy." But anyhow, that story I have used to in other places, and each time there's at least one face I see, a parent, "I never asked my child that." And then, even sometimes a tear, because whoa. And then it's so beautiful to see, because it's like, to me, I feel like it's like doing this. They don't know the language to go to that space, but learning to do the home folk high school one by one, not being disturbed, it gives the trust and the space, the courage to, "Oh, I dare speak." And yeah, then it opens up the heart, and then the Chinese, they have it's like, because they're not used to it. They're used to giving gifts, or yes, saying, taking care. "I can take the bag for you. I can take you here. I can give you a big meal. I can do 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 do." But when it comes to this, then they are so grateful, and so it makes so much sense.
And I would like to add that to me, this is about China, but actually, it's all
It's all over.
over the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
All
Yeah.
this ability to ask deeply, how are you? That's needed all over.
Yeah.
But it takes, it also takes some, it takes a game. It takes something to talk about that is not me. There has to be that frame around it, so we don't cross. We have to challenge our borders, personal borders, but we cannot just bam, step in there. And so it's a,
An
yeah.
icebreaker, right? There's a lot of
Yeah,
ice
yeah, yeah, yeah,
in our relationships. Yeah, that's
yeah.
powerful. Well, I think we've kind of come around the whole hour here, and there's many more things that we could talk about, but I really appreciate you taking the time here during the holidays here to chat with me, and really your leadership. I think taking something that's intuitive and familiar, that that's become part of your life, teaching in a folk high school, and distilling the essence of that to write it down and then to bring it out into the world, into other places. It's a great gift, and a real I'm really grateful for you for having done that. And thank you for chatting with us.
And thank you so much for the invitation, and also for bringing on this. It's, as you said in the beginning, it's really needed in the world right now. So the more we can share, the better.
Right.
I hope to see you on the 10th of
Yeah.
January.
All right. Thank you very much.
All the best to Thorough College also,
Yes.
and you, and have a new year.
Stay in touch. Happy New Year, Jacob.
Happy New Year.